It is November the 5th, 2023, and we are here today with Kathleen Morrow, and we're going to visit with her about her farm. So Kathleen, thank you so much. Tell us the name of your farm.
Well, it was always just known as the Morrow Home Place.
Okay. And it's designated through the National Register of Historical Places. Tell us about that.
Well, there's a National Register process, and so when the area around the home began to develop, I thought that we should save that home simply because it was still there. It's just a very typical statehood home. It's called a Kansas T design. There were thousands of them built all across Kansas and Oklahoma as the settlers moved west. And the top part of the T is usually the living quarters, and the bottom part of the T is where the kitchen is, and so the heat was able to blow away from the house. And so that's what it is. According to the National Register, it is called a hall and parlor home, so that's what it is.
Okay, and when you lived there as a child, who lived in the house with you?
Well, actually, my grandmother lived there. We had the section around it, and so my mom, my dad, and my little brother and I lived in another house just on the other side of the section. But we were all in and out of everybody's houses all day long, and I spent lots and lots of days and nights and summers with my grandmother.
That's wonderful. You're very fortunate. Now, I want to ask about the location of the farm. So from the city of Collinsville, where exactly is the farm located?
Well, if you use modern terms now, you would go out what is now exit 126, turn south toward Owosso, go 2 miles and take the exit east 126th. I'm sorry, you would go out from Collinsville 146th, turn south to 126th, and then turn right. And it is the only house located between Highway 169 and North 129th Street.
On the south side of the road.
On the south side of the road,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's actually, that road is actually a division between Owosso and Collinsville. So technically, the home is located in the Owosso Township.
Okay.
But we always went to Collinsville, and most of the rest of the farm was in Collinsville, et cetera.
Okay, thank you. What years did the family occupy the home?
There are some records of 1905, but the abstracts that I've been able to find show 1913 until now. I mean, there was a family, the Bob Buchanan family, who lived in it in the 80s, but the rest of the time it was, and of course it was still owned by the Morrows. But my grandmother passed away in the 70s, and so it was better to have it occupied than sitting empty.
Right. So in 1913, who lived there?
At that time was Fagan Morrow, Joe Fagan, and his mother, Denoris Morrow.
How do you spell that last name?
D-E-N-O-R-I-A-S or U-S. We'll have to check the cemetery.
Okay, Denoris.
But she's married Yolela Denoris Morrow, and she married George Greenfield Morrow.
Mm-hmm.
And they came from Morrow, Arkansas, because the Morrow family settled that town in Morrow, Arkansas. You would know it now as the Battle of Pea Ridge or the Battle of Prairie Grove. There's a national site there, and the original Morrow home there is a national site as well.
Very interesting. Okay. And let's see, you talked about the family. And now, when did they come to Collinsville? When did the Morrows come to Collinsville?
Well, actually, there's two different families. The Morrow family came from Morrow, Arkansas, after the Civil War. And George Greenfield was a town clerk of some kind, and I don't know whether it was constable or whatever, but anyway, had a store there. And when the Reconstructionists came through, they really destroyed a lot of the South. And so he ended up picking up, he was also a mule trader. He had run mules for the Southern, for the Confederates. And so he moved his mule trading operation over to Indian Territory. So they moved over to the Dog Iron Ranch with Clem Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where Joe Fagan, grew up as a little kid with Will Rogers. That was the connection to the Will Rogers family. Will was older than Joe Fagan, and so Fagan thought he was just wonderful. And of course, Will was always in trouble, which Fagan thought was fabulous. And so they have quite a history with the Rogers family. So that they moved there in about 1897, 1898. Mm-hmm. Then the Ellingwood family is the other side of that. Lucille Ellingwood married Joe Fagan, and she's the wife of the home place. They had the Lazy E Ranch, which is out on the intersection of Highway 20 and Highway 75 here west of town. And they moved here in 1905. And they lived in Tulsa, I think, a few months or a year while the house on the Lazy E was finished. And you can still go. It's now known as the Cooper Ranch. And that house is still out there. In fact, took my little grandson out there a couple of weeks ago. And they built the house and the barns and everything that are still there. Okay. So they came. And then she was sent back. All the children were, well, one girl died, but all the children were sent back to the University of Chicago. And my grandmother graduated from the University of Chicago in 1917 and came back here and was teaching. And Fagan was in town for some reason and saw her up by, remember where Mrs. Oakson used to live up on, Oak Street.
That would be 16th Street, between 16th and 17th on Oak, on the north side of the road.
You know it better than I do. There was a livery stable there. And she would go, there was a school, and she was teaching, and she would go over to the livery stable during recess and get whatever horse or mule or whatever had been, livered for the day, and bring it out and put the children all on it. We've got pictures of her doing that for recess. She put all the children on the animal and ride them around for recess. And so Fagan saw her, and he said, "I'm going to marry that woman." And he did.
But the other gentleman, his father, fought in the Civil War.
George Greenfield.
And yep. He is buried here in Collinsville.
Yep.
With a military headstone.
With his wife, and his wife then is Yolela Denoris Morrow. Mm-hmm. And she's married. Now, she was a McAfee. So all the McAfees, Donna McAfee, Linda McAfee, Buddy McAfee, those are all cousins.
And I know
there's pretty much not a connection that's not connected in Collinsville.
I know Mr. and Mrs. McAfee were so involved in the 4-H program for
wonderful.
Years and helped so many kids. And
they were our 4-H leaders too. Yeah,
generations of kids in Collinsville. Yeah. They were wonderful people. All right. Well, thank you very much. Now, tell me about your family involvement in town. Were they part of organizations? We've mentioned the McAfee family was active in 4-H, but were they did church and in different organizations that they were part of?
Not too much. Lucille, who married Fagan, was in PEO. She was real active in the Home Demonstration Club and PEO, Eastern Star, so she did all of those. She was a member of DAR. A lot of those organizations met in Tulsa. Now, the Home Representative Club met here in town, mm-hmm. but they were active in organizations, but not necessarily here. She was a longtime member of the Collinsville Community Church, and they started the community church when there was just a community.
Right.
And then she stayed in the community church. When my mom married my dad, she was a Methodist, and by that time there was a Methodist church. Mm-hmm. And so we went back and forth. We were at the Methodist church, and then when we went with Grammy, we went to the community church.
Okay.
Daddy was in Kiwanis, and Mama was a nurse, so she worked most of the time. She was also an Eastern Star. So,
where did your mother work?
She started at St. John's, and then when St. Francis opened up, she moved to St. Francis. She did private duty a lot, too, as well, and it really enjoyed that. But she had been a nurse in the Army Air Corps in World War II, and served in the battle front of the Battle of the Bulge. and all across the European battlefront. So she and Daddy both had Bronze Stars, and Daddy had a Silver Star and had a European combat medals, both of them, and they came back home.
You should be very proud of them. That's wonderful. So tell us about the farm. What type of farm was it? Did you raise dairy cattle? Did you have beef cattle? What tell us about the farm.
Well, it changed over the years depending on kind of what was happening and what consumers wanted. Originally, when Fagan had it, he ran some cattle, but he also, you know, had a typical farm. He ran pigs and chickens and sheep and that kind of thing in addition. And he farmed, grew crops, you know, corn and that kind of thing. Had a big dairy farm. And he had a milk operation, and they delivered by wagon to start with, and then eventually by car to all of Tulsa, but what we really know now is North Tulsa, because Tulsa wasn't that big at the time.
Right.
So he had a milk operation and helped set up the, he was one of the original founders of the Tulsa Milk Producers Association, and worked with that. And then eventually Daddy worked with the Tulsa Milk Co-op. I don't know exactly how those two organizations worked together, but it trended.
So what kind of dairy cows did you have?
I don't know what kind he had. I think he had Jerseys. But then when Daddy took over, he eliminated the crops. And because he had gone to OSU for animal husbandry, he liked the animals better, and he had a breeding operation. So he moved more to beef cattle, and so Daddy put together a really good registered Hereford herd. And so he bought and sold, and then that moved most of the land then to mostly blue stem and grazing grasses, you know, grassland. And then we still had, when I was still little in the 50s, we still had hogs and sheep, and Mr. Kersey would come and they'd bring all the sheep in and they'd shear them. And one time Mr. Kersey decided he was going to shear me, and so I went running back into the house terrified, and Mama told Mr. Kersey not to do that. But anyway, we had all the sheep and chickens, and then I was given, Daddy gave me in the first grade, he gave me 40 chickens, 40 little pullets. And I had to arrange in a little book, a little black book, a little binder. And it had a plus and a minus. And I had to write down the money I had coming in was a plus, and the money I had going out was a minus. And then I had to add and subtract each number. And that's, so I learned to add and subtract everything. And so I had to arrange with the cowboys or the hired hands, whoever was going in, to pick up my feed, because Daddy told me if I wasn't organized and didn't get the feed ordered, then I wasn't going to be able to feed my chickens. And then I had a little candling operation, so I candled them, and then we took them to Frank Stevens at the grocery store. And Mr. Stevens would buy my eggs from me, and so that was my first operation in first grade. That was my first business. Mm-hmm. And so the first week I was very upset because I decided I would go, I would buy a purse to put all the money in that I was going to make. So I went up to Henry's Five and Dime, and I was going to pay myself a quarter each week. And so I went up to Henry's Five and Dime, and the purse was 26 cents. So I was a penny in debt until the next week. Typical farmer, right? In the fourth grade, I sold my chickens back, told Daddy farming was a losing operation, and so I went on. But it was a good learning experience.
I bet it was.
But we had all the different animals, and of course all the horses, because we had to have horses to work the cattle and all that. So,
yeah.
But it turned more into, it moved more from a farm operation into a ranch and dairy operation. And then, like I said, Daddy started out with the Jerseys, but then had Holsteins, because Jerseys have high milk content, Holsteins have high volume. And then as consumer taste changed and they wanted lower butter fat, he began to phase out the Jerseys and he brought in Brown Swiss. Mm-hmm. And so by the time Frank was in high school, he used to show Brown Swiss in all the state fairs. Mm-hmm. But that's how we had moved to the Swiss, because it evolved because consumers changed.
Right, I can see that. What's the best part of living on a farm?
Just learning to be self-sufficient. You didn't run to town to fix things. You used what you had, mm-hmm. you know. And you had to learn to trust people. You had to learn to be reliable. You had to learn to be self-sufficient. You had to learn to... People play sports now to learn teamwork. You can learn teamwork on a farm, too. Because if you don't do your job, the next person has to do it. Yeah. If you don't have everybody fed, then those animals go hungry. It, you know, if you haven't thought about what needs to be bought in town, then it doesn't come out, and you've got to wait another week to get it. So it teaches everything: organization, self-sufficiency, trust, dependency, teamwork.
It does. You're right.
And a love of nature, and I think also an awareness of your surroundings, because environmentally you watch the farm change. Environmentally you watch the animals change, you know, that kind of thing. So I think there's an awareness of your environment. If we don't take care of it, nobody else is going to.
That's very well stated. Okay, what was the best part about living in Collinsville, growing up in Collinsville?
Oh, just, you know, it's just a sense of community. We were pretty much kin to everybody. So we didn't know who we were kin to and who we weren't. So if we were corrected, we were acting up on the sidewalk as we were walking down and some adult corrected us, we just did whatever they told us because we were sure they were some aunt or uncle. We just didn't know. But I think, that, you know, small town, again, learning to work together. You know, you couldn't smart off or be hateful to somebody because you were going to see that person the next morning on the bus. And you had to either make amends or be polite. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you just learn to get along and you learn to, again, to depend on people.
Mm-hmm. We live in such a global society today, and children, you know, don't see their grandparents for months and months and months. You were so fortunate to have not only aunts and uncles close by, but to have your grandmother just across the pasture from you and to get to know her so well.
And I didn't realize at the time that she wasn't like everybody else's grandmother, but she was what we, I think, now would call a kind of a Renaissance woman, you know. She was well-educated. When she went to the University of Chicago, she was well-educated in the classics. She was in the first graduating class from Tulsa High. They were here on the ranch at the Lazy E, and they would catch the cowboys would take them down in a wagon to Owosso because that was the end of the trail for the railroad.
Yes.
So they would take them down to catch the train, and then the train would take them to Tulsa, and then they had another house on Elgin Street, and they had a housekeeper, and so the children would stay in Tulsa, in the Elgin Street house, during the week. Mm-hmm. And then on Friday afternoon, they caught the train back to Owosso, and then the cowboys would meet them at the train station and bring them back up to the ranch here at the Lazy E. And then they'd spend the weekend and reverse the process. So education was very, very important to my great-grandfather, who was Hiram K. Ellingwood. And I'm sorry, my uncle was Hiram K. Ellingwood. He was Hiram E. Ellingwood. But it was very important to Hiram Ellsworth Ellingwood that the children all be educated. Mm-hmm. And so he was in a sheep camp in Colorado, in Rocky Ford, Colorado. And they were snowed in, and they had papered the camp with newspapers, the walls of the camp with newspapers. And so he read about this university that was going to be open to everyone. No matter of race or creed or gender or sex or anything else. And he said in that camp, and they were waiting on Lucille to be born. She was the first child. And he said, whatever this child is, I will send them to the University of Chicago because I believe in education for everyone. And so that's why they were all sent back to the University of Chicago.
Because girls didn't get education.
And especially not from Indian Territory, you didn't send them back, you know. And so then, in the afternoon, we had quite a routine. Of course, by the time I knew her, it was in her later years of teaching. And my grandfather had been killed in a car wreck just a year before I was born. So I never knew that grandfather. My other grandfather, I did. And so she had a little bit more time. And so we would get up in the morning and take care of all the chickens and pick all the eggs and everything and have breakfast. And then she'd bring us to school and go home. Or in the summertime, then we'd do chores. And then every afternoon, you bathed, you didn't take a shower. You bathed, which was proper, you know, what was properly done, and we're clean. And by the afternoon, when the men came in or whatever, we'd have tea. And Eva Harvesty and several of the Muriel Ross, he was a science teacher here, they'd come out and they'd have tea together. And she would read the classics. We had the Harvard 5-foot bookshelf, and she'd read the Harvard classics, and we'd sit and have tea in the afternoon and then have supper and start the day the next day. But I didn't realize that other people didn't have those kinds of books and opportunity. I mean, it was just part of our educational process.
Yes.
You know, my mom, she and my mom had that in common, and my mom always said, you can go anywhere in the world if you'll just open a book. And that's what we had a TV, but we weren't allowed to watch it. And they felt like if we had spare time, we were to read, not watch TV. We could watch, we watched on Sunday night, we got to watch Lassie, mm-hmm. You know, but we read.
So you mentioned Frank. Tell us about Frank real quick.
My little brother, he's 5 years younger, went to OSU, went into computer industry, and ended up going to Dallas Baptist Theological and became a minister, has his PhD in Christian history, and worked for a while as a missionary and is now ranching in west of Fort Worth.
So he's in Texas?
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Well, we want to thank you today so much for sharing about your family and about your farm. Do we have any more questions?
If somebody wanted to learn more about the Morrow Home Place, where could they look?
Grammy wrote a column that ran every week in all the Northeastern Oklahoma papers, but especially in the Collinsville News and the Tulsa World, from April of 1937 to August of 1970. She missed 1 week, the week her husband was killed in the car wreck. And so there's a weekly recording of whatever her thoughts were. It was called Just Thoughts of a Plain Country Woman. And I have all those scanned, as many of them as kept together. Some of them fell apart because they were so old. But I have most of them scanned, and they are located on a website, morrowhomeplace.com. The columns are also, all the actual columns, the physical columns, are preserved at Oklahoma State University and Edmund Lowe Library in the Lucille Ellingwood Morrow Collection. So if somebody wanted to see the actual columns, mm-hmm. that's where they are. Or at the Collinsville News. You can always call Ted Wright.
Okay. Yeah, we can always call Ted Wright. We want to thank you today so much for your time, and this has been very informative. Okay, we're going to close. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you.